Live from the heartland and the crossroads of America, it's Tony Katz today.
Maybe it's a twofer. Maybe. But maybe I'll only give you the one. Because realizing that you're on the same side as Alec Baldwin, and you're like, I'm sorry, what's happening? No. You now feel bad for Alec Baldwin, and you're like, I'm sorry, what's happening? And I'm like, no, seriously. Seriously, you're like, go Alec Baldwin, go. And you're like, I'm sorry, what is happening? Well, what's happening is that people are crazed, deranged, and so such believers that they are valuable and important and what they have to say matters, that they can get away with anything. This story happens in a coffee shop where Alec Baldwin, actor, murderer, is getting some coffee. Tony Katz today. What's going on, everybody? 833-468-8669. Find everything at TonyKatz.com. I'm not a fan of Alec Baldwin. His politics are garbage. He did kill a woman. That hasn't changed. He's getting a coffee. And this woman comes into the coffee shop, sees Alec Baldwin, turns on her camera and starts recording. You can't make this up. Welcome to 2024.
Alec, can you please stay free Palestine one time? Why did you kill that lady? You killed that lady and got no jail time? No jail time, Alec? No jail time, Alec. You're putting innocent people in jail, Alec Baldwin.
I'm so sorry.
Free Palestine, Alec, just one time, and I'll leave you alone.
Let's stop for a moment. You want Alec Baldwin to yell out free Palestine, you then call him a murderer, and then you say, but if you yell out free Palestine, I'll leave you alone. How is this not just a perfect encapsulation of how radical these progressives are? I will come at you. I will give you no peace. I will give you no rest. But if you do the thing I tell you to do, I'll stop. It's 1984 come to life. It's crazy. Now, Alec Baldwin is ignoring this woman, and there's an employee getting in the way, trying to get her to leave, and that's when it gets all sorts of special.
I'll leave you alone, I swear. Just say free Palestine one time. One time. One time. One time, Alec. You know he's a criminal. You know he's a f***ing criminal. Come on, Alec, just say free Palestine one time. One time, just one time, please, and I'll leave you alone. Free Palestine. Israel. Zionism. Please say it. One time.
And at the end, you hear that little rustling. That is Alec Baldwin knocking the phone out of her hand. And that's when you're like, well, yeah, of course he did. She was terrible. What a weird, weird thing. I will openly threaten you. I will openly badger you. Do what I say and it stops. That's called a struggle session. Ooh, I've got this camera. I'm going to take a video. You do what I tell you to do. Otherwise, you're this, that, and the other. And don't get me wrong, you'll still be this, that, or the other. I'm just going to say it about you all the time and try and beat you down so you'll say what I want you to say, and then I'll leave you be for a little bit. You understand that if you give into the struggle session just once, you will spend your life giving into the struggle session. We made this analysis in regards to the Indianapolis Star reporter Greg Doyle in that press conference with future WNBA star and certainly college star Caitlin Clark, when he was odd, he was creepy, he was disrespectful. And he's got the apologies and this and that and the other. And he never imagined himself on the outside of being woke. The outside of being decent. The outside of being the good guy. Of course he never envisioned it. They never, ever, ever see it coming. Not now, not once, but never.
Nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition.
You are on the inside until you are on the outside. The winds shift, and at one moment, you are dining on the finest foods, on the finest china. And the next moment, you've been hung in the gallows. Because that's the way it works. You're on the inside until you are no longer necessary. And then you are left. One mistake. One not showing enough fealty. One anything. And bye-bye. It's over. You're done. Greg Doyle learned that. Now, you will see, as you've seen in his apology letter, and you'll probably see in other things, you try and grovel your way back in. But certainly we know, and this, look, I'm not interested in beating the dude up. I'm sharing what has happened. I'm using him as an example of what happened. I don't know what happens with his career. I had argued that there's a 50-50 chance the dude could get fired. People are like, why would he get fired? I said, what do you mean, why would he get fired? It's Gannett newspapers, and these people are woke, and look at how he embarrassed them, and how could you keep somebody like that on your payroll? That misogynist? I don't think it should happen. I don't like the guy. The guy wants to punch me in the face. He said so. I don't like the dude, but I don't want him fired. It doesn't make any sense to me. But I said it's certainly possible. Just based on how these people act, based on how they do things, it is, of course, possible. But he will have to forever show how good he is and how decent he is and how apologetic he is. If you bow to the woke crowd once, if you give in to the struggle session once, you give in forever. I want Alec Baldwin to know that's what happened to him there. That's what he experienced there. And I think it's important for the rest of us to see how it works. Nobody was more pro-left than Alec Baldwin. But here's a subject that other people can now show how much they're pro-left, how they're so connected by going after somebody with a name. You are on the inside until you are not. And when people ask about the madness that we see, how did this happen? Well, very slowly, and then all at once. I don't get harassed. It's interesting. Maybe I don't get in public enough. I don't get harassed. Now you say to me, Tony, you are nowhere near as popular or famous as Alec Baldwin. True. But I mean, even when you've seen people like entering shops and screaming and yelling, man, that has never happened to me. Like, never. But this goes back to the, if it does happen, you cannot bow to this mad crowd. You have to forcefully stand up and say no. Stand up and fight back. Stand up and push back. It's very important. Outrageously important. Now, you got to pick the thing you want to push back on. I don't know if suing over the size of your beer is the thing to do. That story is coming up. I'm Tony Katz. Sometimes the people are standing up for what's right. And sometimes the people are standing up because they think there's a buck in it. They think there's a little profit in it. Tony Katz today. Look, I don't mind people profiting. I do sometimes have an issue if people think they can profit off of somebody else's work just by making some radical claim. I now bring the story to you. You tell me if this is legitimate. Tony's court is now in session. I just want to say that we don't own the copyright to this music. This is the People's Court, and I think we're allowed to use it in the world of radio. That said, if somebody would like to write me some good court music, I'd be down with that. Texas man sues Cinemark over alleged deceptive drink sizes. Cinemark is a movie theater. And at this specific Cinemark, they serve beer. Because nothing says, hey, enjoy the movie in silence, like having giant beers.
That's not how it works. That's not how any of this works.
And this is why people have Netflix and big screen TVs. The guy buys a beer and it's advertised as a 24-ounce beer, or as some people call it, a beer. Well, it turns out he measured it at home because he was like, you know what? I know what 24 ounces of beer tastes like. I have many times in my life had myself 24 ounces of beer, and there's something wrong with this 24-ounce beer.
It's a trap.
So he took it home, and he measured it. He measured the beer. He was Doogie Howser. And, well, that's WMD. That wouldn't be like a mad scientist, but it's the only music I had. He measures it, and he finds out that it's only 22 ounces. He sues. It accuses Cinemark, and here's how the reporting goes, of intentionally misleading customers to believe they were getting more for their money. Defendant markets and sells 24-ounce drinks at a premium price, despite the containers being physically incapable of holding that amount of liquid. Defendant has reaped enormous profits from its false, misleading, and deceptive packaging and sale of its 24-ounce drinks. Now, the question is this guy wrong to sue? If you say 24 ounces, shouldn't it be 24 ounces? According to him, producer Jason, like, he got out beakers, and I think there was a Bunsen burner. He pulled out an abacus, and he actually got a Ouija board so he could speak directly to Oppenheimer and tried to do the mathematics. He did fill it to the top. He says that it's impossible that this would hold a 24-ounce drink. And therefore, this is not all right. So the question is, what is the movie theater going to say in response? What possibly could the movie theater be saying in response to this? If you say something is a certain size, shouldn't it be? Now, did you get in one moment the wrong batch of cups? And how would you prove that this is the cup that they always use? Wouldn't you have to go to the movie theater over the course of, let's say, a month and get a beer each time, and you get the cup, and then you measure that cup and make sure it's only 22 ounces, not 24? Because the guy doesn't seem to be complaining about the price. He's saying, you told me it had a certain amount of beer in it. And it's deceptive. You can't say it's 24 and get 22 ounces. What was that, Jason? He does have a point. Like, I thought, like, he was saying that you know, the head of the beer would go down, so therefore I wasn't getting the full. No, he's saying that the cup can't do it. You hear Joe Biden complain constantly.
Name me one.
About shrinkflation. They don't put as many chips in the bag and the Snickers bar isn't as big. Yeah, shrinkflation's a real thing. A legitimately real thing. And don't get me wrong. It sucks.
I hate old white men.
I'm not sure what that has to do with it. I just like the sound effect. It stinks that you pay more and you get less. Someone had posted about a Big Mac that the Big Mac went from 50 cents to $8 and is now only 60% of the size it was then. Like, that's brutal. By the way, a Big Mac is $8? No, it's not. Hold on. A Big Mac is not $8. How, okay. All right. Do I have to do this? Hold on. I'm doing it. I'm doing it, people. So this is... do I have to do this like through like Grubhub or DoorDash? All right. I'll do it through Grubhub. And I will order McDonald's, which is to me the idea of ordering fast food through like one of these services blows my mind. Combo meal. Holy crap. A Big Mac combo meal. All right, so hold on. I'm going to do, and it's only medium. How much was it? In 2023? Just for the sandwich. I'm talking about the meal with the fries and the drink. $10.78. Holy, yeah, you know your terrible food. Hold on, now I'm getting texts. From, okay, this is, can I use your name? I gotta ask if I can use the name. Business owner, a baker. Her business insurance just went up 100%. My homeowner's insurance. Was it my homeowner's that went up $1,000? So Cindy Hawkins, Circle City Sweets, which is here in Indianapolis. Oh, the chocolate chip cookies. Mwah! 100%. Holy crap. This is Courtney on X. The kids and I had McDonald's today. Three medium meals, $27. Ho, ho, ho. Dang. If I take a look at $15, if I go back to when my wife and I were dating, we were broke, but we had a good time. And when we saved up enough, we would go for sushi. No matter what we did, the two of us having sushi, the meal came to about $32, somewhere between $27 and $32. That's what it always came to. Sushi. And now you're telling me that three medium meals with your kids is 27? You know what? I hope this guy wins $1 billion from Cinemark. Now I'm just angry. Now I am just outraged, I tell you. Good Lord. But there are people who will tell you that these lawsuits are frivolous. This is just a guy, you know, exploiting the system. I don't know how it's exploiting the system if you say something is X and you market it as X. You could have just said large beer. How many ounces? I don't know. It depends on the cup we got. It's a mystery. Figure it out. Said 24. Business insurance up 100% and no claims. Dear Lord, Cindy, that's rough. Also, I would like to order some cookies after Passover. Can't do it right now. Dang it! I'm Tony Katz. So I've got an NBA playoffs where the Pacers destroy the Bucks in the regular season, then look like garbage in the playoffs. I've got a playoffs where I've got LeBron James cursing his face off because he can't figure out how to beat the Nuggets. In the meantime, I don't know if anybody's watching these games. It seems like I'm catching these stories like secondhand, thirdhand, days later. Where's the excitement for the playoffs, or am I missing something? Tony Katz today. It's good to be with you. JMV joins us right now. He is the voice of sports. JMV 1070, JMV 1070 on X is where you find him. This whole LeBron thing, as you know, Jamal Murray hits that winner in game two. The Lakers are down 2-0 there. He seems like a super unhappy cat. Is he unhappy with his play? Was he unhappy with the refs? What's going on here?
Unhappy he did not get an and-one call, for one. And unhappy because you lose. Unhappy because he had a chance with a three that he didn't make. He should be happy about this thing. That dude's 39 years old. That, to me, is still incredible. And as much as, you know, a lot of people want to put up with the fact that he was whining and crying last night about the officiating in his game, the officiating, you know, in the Philly-Knicks game as well. There was a lot of whining and crying going on. It is still amazing to see a dude out there 39 years of age doing to the level against the greatest players in the world what he is doing. But, yeah, it was a wine fest last night. And it all, again, accumulates from just the disappointment as to what you just mentioned, is they can't beat Denver. And they threw everything at him last night, Tony, in that game too, but the kitchen sink, and still couldn't get over the top. So you go back home to L.A. down to 0-2 in that first round best of seven, and a lot of people are writing you off right now because you had a couple of decent opportunities, especially in game two, and you couldn't cash it in.
By the way, you talk about that Knicks game. So the Knicks are up 2-0 against the 76ers. They win 104-101. The 76ers are so angry, they actually filed a formal complaint about the refereeing, about what's happening. That is not normal stuff. It is a very, very large statement. There's no doubt that the refs notice that kind of stuff. What is their protest? And what do we expect in game three? A different level of officiating?
Nick Nurse, well, it all of this, Tony, it lives in a world of trying to get an edge on any call whatsoever in the next game. Phil Jackson was a master of this in the day, in his era, where he would constantly be harping on that, and people would say, oh, there he is whining again. But no, it is all, it is part of it's in the moment, don't get me wrong, but it's also looking down the road to the future to try to gain yourself any advantage, any edge whatsoever. And Nick Nurse was upset because he tried to call a couple of different timeouts where he had said the official saw him motioning for the timeout and did not grant them a couple of different times. Now, yeah, I kind of looked back and looked at the video situation because, you know, we have that capability. And while there is one I think you could dispute if you're Nick Nurse, I don't know about the other. So this is probably going to fall upon deaf ears. And then ultimately he's going to get what he wants when he goes back home for the next two games in Philadelphia down 0-2. And he's probably going to get the benefit of a whistle. He'll probably want more of a whistle for Joel Embiid. Joel Embiid said after the game last night that they're the better team. They're going to win this series. He's disappointed they're down 0-2 the way that they've looked so far. They'll probably get some calls. And at the end of it all, Tony, that's what this is all about. It's about being angry in the moment, but it's also about looking to the future and then seeing how you can get an angle or an edge for your team in terms of the whistle category. And oftentimes it works. It works for Phil Jackson all the time.
Talking to JMV, he is the voice of sports on X, JMV 1070, 1070. I have a theory. And my theory is that the NBA playoffs, while I don't yet have the data in terms of the ratings, there seems to be less chatter than I have heard in years past. Am I being distracted? Like, am I involved because of all the other things that I do and cover and travels and stuff? Am I missing it? Or is there something a little humdrum about the playoffs thus far?
Tony, there may not be. Now, talking to me is different because I love basketball And I probably don't notice it until, as you mentioned, until we get the numbers, and then we can maybe see how that plays out itself. I myself don't notice it, but I will tell you this, and you just brought up a couple of different things. LeBron crying in Denver and Nick Nurse whining about the officials in New York.
It's a turnoff, right?
No. And here, I'm going to give you a point here. You get the Bucks and the Pacers, which going back to the regular season, you had a melodrama, a soap opera going on in those five meetings. Tony, I think the off-the-court stuff is essential to try to, to keep from falling into that humdrum category that you're alluding to right here. Because for me, it's all about basketball. I love the basketball. I love watching it being played at the highest level. But for others, fringe fans, right, those that don't always tune in, you probably want something else. And these soap operas that develop between teams, whether it's a rivalry or it's whining about the officials or it's a back and forth on the floor, to me, in the NBA postseason, Tony, that is essential not to fall in the category that you just brought up. Hey, you know what? This thing seems kind of boring, right? There doesn't seem like that there are the juicy rivalries as we used to go to. And I think a lot of the way people are drawn to the NBA postseason also has to do with what's going on off the floor. And we have not had enough of that. I thought that's maybe why last night ultimately could be good. We shall see. And hopefully we'll see later on tonight in game two for the Bucks or the Pacers if things escalate. I'm not suggesting you have to have a Palace of Auburn Hills brawl or anything like that, but this whole kissy face, hugging one another, hanging out after the game, AAU bullcrap mentality is not what people, especially on the fringe, want to see. You want to see a little bit of angst. And I thought last night, and we'll see about tonight, and as we move forward, if some off-the-court angst can be built, can be manufactured, because people love that. It's not just all people sitting back and saying, hey, I'm JMV and I love basketball, right? They have me right now. You're trying to get another group to maintain, to focus, to watch, to hang out with you. And the off-the-court stuff has always been a way to do that.
Now let's take a look at the three games we've got tonight. Minnesota is one up against Phoenix. Milwaukee one up against the Pacers. And the Clippers one up against Dallas. How do you see them going?
Well, Dallas was an absolute disaster. Dallas kind of reminds me of the Pacers situation, right? You had a lot going in, no Kawhi Leonard for the Clippers, and Dallas got blown out by the Clippers without Kawhi Leonard. Pacers and the Bucks, this is a must-bounce back. And I had mentioned this yesterday because obviously I'm staked out, and I do a lot of talking about local teams here in Indianapolis, and I was talking about the Pacers. And people say, hey, you know, it's game two. You still have a chance to split, and that's what your priority is when you're on the road in those first two playoff games, is to at least gain a split. But my problem was, Tony, that was such an absolute disastrous performance by the Pacers on Sunday when Giannis wasn't playing that they needed to be ripped for that. I would expect a completely different team in terms of the way that they play in shooting the basketball. But I would tell you this, Tony, and this is something you watch for later on tonight. This is, to me, a must-win for the Pacers and Milwaukee. If they're not able to manufacture the style and the pace in which they have won in the regular season offensively, that's getting up and down. If you have Milwaukee playing the way that Milwaukee has, Milwaukee's going to win it because the Pacers can't adjust to me to anything else. They're going to win any grinded-out games that are played under 100 points. So that's problematic. I would expect the Pacers to look much better and bounce back tonight, but if they don't get their tempo, they're not going to win. Now, what was the third game you asked about, too?
Oh, gosh. I asked about the Pacers and the Bucks. I asked about the Clippers and the Mavericks. And then, of course, Minnesota and Phoenix.
Yeah. Okay, Minnesota and Phoenix. This is what's kind of interesting about that, right? So you get a game two. And a lot of people are suggesting, I like Frank Vogel, former Pacer head coach as well, like him a great deal. A lot of people have suggested if it's not a good showing in the first round of the postseason for all that they have invested in Durant, in Booker, in Bradley Beal, in Phoenix, that he may not make it out after 1 year. So a lot is riding on Phoenix in game number two. The problem that they have, much like that I mentioned with the Pacers and not getting to play offensively, their brand, their style, their tempo of play, is that Phoenix doesn't offer up a great deal outside of offense. And Minnesota is either one of the best or the best defensive team in the NBA. That is problematic. That's a bad matchup for Phoenix, really anybody in general, but especially for Phoenix, because their guys, their top three, you take one or even two of those guys away and they don't have a chance. So Minnesota is a more defensive team. I think they take a stranglehold on that series later on tonight, at least defend their home courts in those first two games. Minnesota is really good defensively, and Anthony Edwards is an absolute game changer, individually speaking, on the offensive side too. So I think that Minnesota goes up 2-0 and makes this an easy first-round series against the Suns.
Talking to JMV, he is the voice of sports. Find him on X at JMV at 1070. Before I get to the NFL draft, which is coming up, there's sometimes players and situations that don't work. And sometimes it's the player, sometimes it's the situation. Sometimes it is the team itself. This brings us to Zach Wilson. The absolute disaster that was Zach Wilson, quarterback for the New York Jets, now traded to the Broncos. The Broncos brought in Russell Wilson, thinking that this was going to be fantastic. Still plenty of juice in the tank. Unmitigated disaster. Sean Payton wants nothing to do with him. Trades him over to the Steelers, which now has maybe the most interesting quarterback room in the NFL. The Jets pick up Zach Wilson. Is that them saying it clearly was the situation, not the player? Or is that them saying, we don't really have a shot in the draft anyway, somebody has to throw the ball?
No, I think the not a shot in the draft anyway, because you consider this, what do they draft, 12th? Overall, I think coming up in round one on Thursday, there's no guarantee that the quarterback that you want is going to be available when they draft, unless they trade up. And remember how many assets they gave up for Russell Wilson. I mean, basically everything, and how much money they had to eat. That will go down in history as one of the worst deals of all time. So I think that is a team, because basically you just, you know, gave a bag of chips away for this guy and Zach Wilson. So you didn't give anything up. You bring him in just to see, because you're not entirely sure exactly what you're going to be able to do with that position in the draft. So, and again, Zach Wilson is a great example of a guy that you see, and you talk about the measurables, right? Or the eyeball test. He's a guy that can throw it running out of bounds 70 yards down the field. But somebody's got to be there to catch it, and that's been the problem. He's got tools to be able to throw the football, physical gifts to be able to do that, but he does not have those gifts, those similar gifts, to play the role of quarterback.
And but nobody in the Broncos organization.
Sometimes guys fall in love with the physical nature of it.
No one in the Broncos organization says, this guy can lead a team. They're saying, right, we need someone to throw the football.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, it's just taking a shot on somebody that was easily available, and knowing that you don't know what you're going to get at number 12. You don't know if you're going to be able to trade up. Probably not. If you stay right there, there's going to be somebody like Bo Nix, you know, out of Oregon, that's going to have that availability there for you. Michael Penix, you know, maybe that's probably a little bit too high for him. Do you take a shot at him out of Washington? That's probably saying, well, we really screwed the pooch here with doing what we did for Russell Wilson, and now we have to sit in this a little bit, and we're going to try to, with Sean Payton, manufacture, you know, a couple of options as best we can. And I think those are the options, or at least that's the first option with Wilson they came up with. And we'll see on Thursday night whether number 12 overall or their first round selection in general is going to be that option number two. I would expect so.
Let's take a look at the draft. Right now, the question is, with the Chicago Bears on the clock, who is the top selection in the NFL draft? And just to give you an example, the people over there at ESPN say the best available player is Caleb Williams, quarterback.
Yeah.
They say the best fit is Marvin Harrison Jr., the receiver out of Ohio State. Which way are the Bears going?
Well, I think the best player is Marvin Harrison Jr., but we're talking about teams that need to fill the void with the best quarterbacks available for that particular position. That's going to be Caleb Williams. To me, it's going to go Caleb Williams. It's going to go Jaden Daniels. It's going to go Derek May out of North Carolina, probably somewhere like that in the top three, because we always prioritize, Tony, in the NFL, the quarterback position, and that's what's going to go. So I would guess Marvin Harrison Jr. is going to come off the board fourth. I think Marvin Harrison Jr. is going to be the best player in this draft consistently for the future, but because he is not a quarterback, he's not going to get singled out as high as the others, and Caleb Williams will go off the board number one overall.
JMV, the voice of sports, find him on X, JMV1070, JMV1070. Appreciate you, man. More is coming up. I'm Tony Katz. Many, many Americans watching what's happening on these college campuses all across the country and asking themselves, how did we get to this place? How does this happen? Well, it happens very slowly and then all at once. And it happens through absolutely horrific, shameful, nonsensical, garbage leadership. The total lack of a moral core. And this is happening in the family, and this is happening in culture. And it happened with Joe Biden. He's so desperate to keep his party together that he won't call out the bigots in it. That story is coming up. Keep everything right here. Find everything at TonyKatz.com. This is Tony Katz Today.